Okay, so as promised, today I have to tell you how to tell your kids this, after which you'll tell me how to tell my kids this, because I'm on the struggle bus too. And I'm thinking of it in kind of two categories, because I have two. So I've got a six-year-old, and I've got a 12-year-old.
13 next month.
13 next month. So two very different conversations. Add that to the board, yeah. Me. Add me to the board. Way back when we started the class and I said, well, this is kind of how we'll have conversations, we had some kind of guidelines of, in general, this is how you think about having a hard conversation with a kid. You get a basic idea yourself, which is what we've done for 3 weeks, because it was a tough one. Like, let's make sure we kind of know what we think. And then we're going to start trying to translate it into childese, which is what today's about, of what words might work. Get a metaphor if you can. Not a lot of useful transgender metaphors, but we're going to try. Use a biblical metaphor if possible. The only one that actually comes to mind, especially based on this morning's sermon, is the idea of we're going to talk about potter and clay, that someone has shaped you and made you. And the idea that you're a created being is the closest thing I can get to what would the Bible have to say about this. That I think a kid could kind of get their heads around, and maybe some adults too. And then 5 and 6, we're going to tolerate misunderstandings. Don't fly off the handle with your kid, especially when they come home with something new and exciting. Just secrets that you might remember from when you were a kid, doing things that provoke your parents is kind of fun. Right? So if you make this would really stick it to him, you know, you're just asking for it. So to me, it's, when I talked about with Luke, it's almost kind of a bored atmosphere to the conversation. I was like, yeah, it's kind of sad. Like, I just not, oh, the world is ending. That's what's going on in my head. Like, this is the apocalypse. But with Lucas, I was like, yeah, that's happening. It's a tragedy, you know.
It's kind of funny. He, on anything, even he will find some random video. Mom, did you know this was going on? We're just like, oh, yeah. It kind of, I know it knocks kind of the wind out of his sails.
Just a little.
But it does, I hope, kind of bring him back to reality. That not everything, number one, what do we always say? Don't believe everything or really anything you see on the internet. Yeah. And number two, it's okay. We're going to get through it. Just dial it down a little.
And definitely encourage questions, imagination. If your kids sense that this topic is off topic with you or off limits with you, they'll ask somebody else. I don't like their answer.
They're going to ask someone else.
Christian parents in some generations have been really bad about saying, we're not going to talk about sex because it's weird and dirty. Okay, how are we going to talk to young children? We've commented this before, and I'm going to now repeat it. We all need to take a trip to the farm. It's something that we miss out on city life is like, it's kind of, mammal reproduction is kind of right in your face. And you're like, oh, that's how it works. So there's part of me that thinks maybe that would be valuable to spend a little time on the farm. The Tylers will have you out
early and whenever.
Yeah. Just show up at their door. Hey, I'm going to have a talk with my kids. Do you have any animals doing anything exciting? But we have a purebred mini schnauzer.
Ask your dad.
Yeah, it's a good answer. Send him to Odie. We have a purebred mini schnauzer that we bred recently, twice actually, and the female dog was a guest, but the ceremony took place in the backyard, and our boys were looking out the back window. And so,
well, and course, in our guest bedroom, and in our living
room. Yeah, it's kind of like, come on, get a room, guys. Got some great puppies out of it, but Calvin just thinks it's funny because, again, he's six. But it was like, that's how you make babies, kind of, when you're a dog. It's like, okay.
Lucas turns bright red.
Like, wait. Is that how? And I'm like, it's a little better than that, but conceptually, those are the parts. Like, that's how it works. And it led to a conversation where I didn't have to, you know, get out the P section of the encyclopedia. So, no kidding. Like, there's a reason God surrounded us with animals that do the thing. And then you're like, oh, okay. And again, kind of hard to argue with it. Suddenly, we're all science. Like, Christians are pro-science. We're like, This is how the mammal kingdom works, right? This is a male, this is a female, this is how it works, this is how procreation happens. Yay, science, take a biology class, this is how it works. And that's how it works for humans too. So let's start. Now we're having the conversation. How does it go? First off, as we've said all along, praise, curiosity. What a great question. If your first response is, ugh, or ask your father, you know, I'm really glad you asked me that. Reinforce that you love questions. The harder, the better. Bring it on. I think like your go-to sentence that you need to reinforce is God made us to be girls and boys. Okay. I think that the creation part of it is the part of it that they're actually getting in a Bible class that translates well to this topic. And it's surprisingly the same conversation I want to have with an adult. Only I'd say men and women. Like God created gender. That is something that he did that's not up to me. It's part of who you are. It's not incidental. And with the little kids, this part of it is actually easy. Because you appeal to current knowledge. Are you a boy or a girl? Pretty young. When do kids learn that? Like pretty early they get that. I remember Lucas was in pre-K. And they sent home like this, let's figure out where your kid's at mentally. And it had these list of questions like, what color is the sky? Blue. And then the question was, because Lucas is a brat, the question was, is your mommy a girl or a boy? And he says, boy. I said, and Celine says, oh, we're in trouble. And I said, is your daddy a girl or a boy? Girl. I was like, you brat, you know, you're smart enough that you're just messing with me now. But or even a bit, like, you knew it, yeah. And it would be funny to switch them, right? So that's existing knowledge. Is mommy a boy or girl? Like, that's a thing they recognize without a deep knowledge of DNA or genetics. It's like there is a difference. And they don't know all of what it means, but they know there is a difference, that it matters. And then I want to then explain the situation, whether it's same-sex attraction or transgenderism, with empathetic language. I'm not going to use words like, well, honey, they're sinners. I'm going to use language that, like, explains the situation in a very realistic way. Some people get confused about it, what it means to be a boy or a girl, and that's very sad. Okay? So confused is not a moral declaration. It's a reality declaration. I mean, there is a real world. They are confused. Doesn't make them bad people as such. It just means something's out of whack, okay? And sad. Like, my dad's really angry at gay people. No. It's sad that some people are not able to see what God made for what it is. So the words I would really want to hinge on are creation, God made boys and girls. Some people are confused. That's really sad. And I think kids in the Calvin age range could pick up most of that without a lot of detail. You don't have to, because this is the struggle, right? You haven't had the birds and bees talk yet, and you're having to have this chat. So what can you say? I think you can at least say that much. And then it's them that brought it up. You don't have to sit them down and say, let me tell you about transgenderism. They see something they think is out of the ordinary, which, by the way, reinforces the point. They already recognize the categories, and they are confused that this doesn't fit into the categories they know. And you're saying, you're right. Your perception of reality is correct. These are real God-made categories. This person is confused, not you. Questions on the young children part of it, of how we might have that chat.
Do you think it's better to wait until they ask you? Do you not think it's better to preemptively talk about it?
I think probably so. I don't think you'll have to wait very long.
That's the other side.
What were we watching with Lucas? It was America's Got Talent.
Yep.
And it had the transgender comic up there, and Lucas, you know, was 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And he says, what's that? And that was an opportunity to have the conversation. And we didn't change the channel, and we didn't say, oh, stupid people and their agenda. It was just like, well, let me tell you, that is a man who is confused.
And any Disney movie or TV show that you've seen the past year is going to bring up that.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to come up.
It's going to come up.
Or two women sharing a kiss on a show, again, just for the sake of being edgy. And Luke's looks like, and we'll say.
And Calvin, those at are this age, he's, why do those two girls kiss? Like, and for your kids may be more inquisitive than Calvin. With Calvin, he just kind of blows it off right now. We've had
the same.
He doesn't
want to kiss a girl either. I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
So.
But he doesn't ask as many. He's not as inquisitive as Lucas right now. So we just kind of just play real low key.
So,
and then keeps asking more questions. We'll keep answering those. For Calvin, our biggest focus is reinforcing what God made and for him to ask us the questions.
Yep.
Those are really the only two things we
probably more important than actually understanding the topic is ask the right people and God's part of the answer. You get that? Like, we can build on that foundation.
Yeah.
Other? Okay. Well, let's move on to the murky world of adolescence.
Great. So what age does this start?
Now.
When apparently we know.
I think for girls, it seems like it's younger and younger.
Yeah. I have a class. Later in this series of classes, actually, I have a lesson on it was engineered for like baptism and the question of when do people need to start thinking about mature spiritual topics. And in the process of that, I end up making some slides of when does a boy become a man and a girl. And it's interesting in our culture kind of like where those markers are for a young lady. It might be your first period. Is that where you kind of like note a transition into adolescence? For a boy, I was reading something interesting, and it says a young boy becomes a man when a man tells him he is. Like there's some event in life where you say, this is what grown-ups do, this is what a man does. And he goes, oh. Really? And like kind of, it's not a discrete moment where you just say, oh, there it is. It just kind of happens. So what I'm going to do is show you what we said to the younger children, and then I'm just going to, in yellow, dial it up a little bit for older kids. What a great question. I'm glad you asked me that. Never be afraid to ask me questions like that. That's why I'm here. Like, I really want to emphasize, yes, not, ugh, right? They are going to pick up on the vibe you put off, and it's, ugh, I don't want to deal with this. Instead, it's, yes, they asked me. Be happy about it.
No question is a stupid question, as much as you want to say that's a stupid question. Because, again, they don't have that capacity to understand what questions are good and bad and all that.
Yeah.
It's just not there.
If you have to ask, apparently,
yeah,
it's a question you need to ask.
Something rolling around in your brain and you want to know.
When Samuel was younger, I made the mistake of not asking him to clarify.
Mm.
And I went into way too much detail than what he was actually asking.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
Dad, I was just asking about the dogs in the backyard. I didn't need to know. So, oh, my bad. I'm going to upgrade from God made us to be girls and boys to something about human purpose in life. The key to happiness is learning that we are happy when we are what God made us to be. We are miserable when we feel like we are not that or trying to be something else. That has a little bit of the doctrine of sin in it. And that's actually what's happening in these areas where my sense of what I'm supposed to be is distorted. And so, of course, they're miserable. And again, empathy language. I feel for you. That must be a terrible feeling. But leaning into it doesn't make you feel better. The contentment, joy, purpose, satisfaction, and above all, glory to God, comes when we're trying to be what He made us to be. And that's true in your career, in your gender, in your sports, and whatever you're doing. We can go a little further with the are you a girl or a boy talk. Do you understand where babies come from? Have we had that chat yet? You know? With Lucas, we've now had it. The first time we talked about this, we hadn't had it yet. And I was like, oh, crud. We haven't had that talk, and I have to have this talk. So that may be a hint at some point of you're going to be the judge of that. When do you need to have the birds and bees talk or dogs in the backyard talk or whatever?
Uh-huh.
But if you've had that talk, you say, okay, remember that conversation? That is all true and is the basis of sex and gender, right? Sex and gender is not about some other mystical mental construct. It's about that. It's just a biological reality. It is what the world is. It is what we have been made to be. And whatever categories you may experience that don't fit into that, again, confused. I'm going to use that language even with older kids. You and your friends are currently in the most confusing time of your life. And yes, there are people making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using confusion language, and instead of like evil language, I'm saying worse or sad. They're going to pick up on the morality of it, actually, just if there's something that hurts people, that has to be immoral and on some level, right? If it's making things bad, if you're intentionally making someone worse, there's a moral component to that, and they'll pick up on it. And you can mention it if you need to, but this is a sad situation. There are people making it worse. The people that are stuck in it, I feel terrible for, but they're confused. It's not okay.
That's teaching your kids empathy. It's teaching them how to have empathy. I'm here if you need to talk.
Would choice be a bad word to use? Because I use that a lot with my kids. They had a choice. I don't know that they're making the best choice.
Yeah.
You know how to...
You do. You know how to make choices.
I'm okay with the word choice as long as, in our minds, these aren't... I'm getting a little philosophical here. These aren't completely free choices. They're not choices made in a vacuum. So you still had choice. Okay. So if your dad's an alcoholic and your grandpa's an alcoholic, you do have some choice in what you do. It's not a completely free choice. Like, you got dealt a bad hand. I'm sorry. But you have some choices to make. And that's kind of how I feel here. Like, again, the empathy is something happened. And it has influenced this decision. They didn't roll the dice and say, well, transgender. Right? It is a choice, though. And they do have some input on what happens. That part, I'm not entirely sure how to convey. Maybe with kids, it's, do your kids have a choice in what they wear to school? Lucas does. He can go in his closet and pick out any of the things that I've already picked for him. I mean, I went and bought the clothes. So, like, it's not a completely free choice. But he does have some choice within that, right? And in the same way, when it comes to your sexuality, there are some things that influence that choice and might nudge you in one direction or another, but you still get some say in that. Yeah. So I think choice is a good word. Obviously, there are folks who would strongly disagree with that, but I'm not one of them. I'm fine with the word choice.
Well, so if you're talking directly with somebody who's going through this, the word choice will just take them off and...
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. With my kids, I can use the word choice.
Like talking to my kids, you know, pray didn't make a good choice, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
You know kind of where to go with this and what to do.
I actually really like the word choice because I just remember growing up, going back to sex ed in church, nobody ever told me you have a choice what you think about. Like, just boys are this way, and they're going to be this way, and they can't help it. But that's not really true. And the older I got, the more I realized, like, I'm responsible for what I entertain.
Yeah.
So I like that.
I remember being in elementary school, and the big thing was, they made me mad.
Yeah.
We had to have that big talk. They did their thing.
Yeah.
You get to choose how you respond to it.
And that's a great example of what I mean by... It's not an entirely free choice. Like, you're in a circumstance where somebody's provoking you or whatever.
Yeah.
But you still get some say at the end of it, of what you do about it. With kids that are a little older, I'll even go a little further if I'm able. A lie cannot make you happy is an important sentence that I want to tell kids. When something is wrong, you have to want the cure before it can help you. I can't just tell a person, be different. That doesn't fix it. Growing up means knowing the difference between make-believe and reality. I think it's an important conversation. And it also allows them to become an adult in that moment, right? With what time we have, which isn't much, I'm going to try to show you about 8 minutes of my favorite Catholic priest. Don't you have a favorite Catholic priest? Yeah. Father Mike Schmidt does these great videos where he explains Catholicism and in the process tackles some stuff where I'm like, oh, he said that really well. So, without further ado, the one and only Mike Schmidt.
Hi, my name is Father Mike Schmitz, and this is the Ascension Presents. So I was over Memorial Day weekend hanging out with my family, and one of my nephews, he pretended he was a dog. And you know, I've ever did with a kid, little kid when they're like, I'm a puppy, and you're like, okay, you have the ball, and you throw the ball, and they come back with it, and you're playing around. At one point it was time for supper, and so I was like, okay, buddy, you know, time to get up, wash your hands, get ready for supper. He's like, no, I'm a puppy. And you know, I'm the fun uncle. As a priest, I'm the fun uncle, so I'm like, I'm not going to correct this kid. I just kind of directed him to his parents, and his parents were like, listen, you're a little boy, you're not a dog, wash your hands and sit at the table. And I thought, all right, that's good. That's good parenting right there, where, you know, here's the kid. Maybe he really thinks he's a dog, but the reality is you're not a dog. I was thinking about this and thinking about that love that my nephew's parents have for him when it comes to this big thing on the news, of course, which is Bruce Jenner. or anyone else who experiences the sense of being transgendered, the idea that this, I have a, for gender's case, I have a man's body, but I'm not really a man. I've always felt like a woman. You know, people will say, are you very judgmental? Here's what I'm saying. That I have no judgment on this thing. I just have an assessment. I'm not saying that transgender is evil. I just think that that perception of him saying, I'm actually a woman, I just think that assessment or that perception is off. I think it's inaccurate. Here's what I mean. I mean, just leave and ask the question. Okay, those of you who are men who are watching this, those of you who are women who are watching this, women, what does it feel like to be a woman? Guys, what does it feel like to be a man? Flip it around and say, men, do you have any idea what it feels like to be a woman? And women, do you have any idea what it feels like be a man? No, the reality is, of course, we don't. We have no idea what it feels like to be a member of the opposite sex. All we have, this is crazy, all we have is gender stereotypes. Here's what I mean. There are stories about, you know, here's a young boy, and his parents say, well, you know, we're treating him like a girl. He really is a girl because he identifies as a girl. Why? Well, you know, ever since he was little, we didn't have to tell him he liked dolls more than he liked trucks. He liked dresses more than he liked jeans. He liked pink more than he liked blue. And you think of that, wait a second, that's how you know that your little boy is actually a girl? Because he just happens to like things that are traditionally associated with girls? It's just something that's arbitrary. Skirts, that women wear skirts, is arbitrary. That women play with dolls or over trucks is arbitrary. In fact, I think about this. One of my older sisters, growing up, she was what you would call back in the day, since I'm an old man, what they call back in the day, they called her a tomboy. Why? Because she loved hunting, she loved fishing, she was incredible at sports. She's in medicine right now, she's a doctor. The field that she's in right now is a field traditionally associated, dominated by men. Her husband is a stay-at-home dad. Now, she is hard charging, she does a lot, she's really smart, she takes bull by the horns, all these kinds of things. Things that are masculine traits. Now, wait, is she a man? No. Why? Because she's a woman. She's the mom of her kids. My brother-in-law, he's patient, he's kind, he's gentle with his kids, stay-at-home dad. Traditionally, things associated with women. How do we know he's not a woman? Because he looks at his body reveals that he's actually a man. Here's the crazy thing, is if my perception doesn't match up with reality, it's not reality that has to change, it's my perception of reality that has to change. We all know this when it comes to, I'm sure some of you have this experience of people in your life who suffered from something like another kind of body dysmorphia, something like anorexia. There's a young woman that I remember working with years ago, it's so painful. She was in the hospital because she was so thin, she was 98 pounds, but she still perceived herself as being fat. She said, no, I still feel fat. Like, wait a second. But your perception and reality is off. Well, it's not reality that's changed. It's your perception of reality that has to change. That's an act of love. In fact, there's this other version of body dysmorphia, this kind of misperception of one's body. It's called BIID. It stands for Body Integrity Identity Disorder. And what BIID is it's when someone looks at, like, saying something like their hand and says, this isn't my hand. It feels foreign to me, or these legs feel foreign to me. In fact, there was a documentary I watched a number of years ago about a woman who she perceived herself to be a paraplegic. She perceived herself that her legs didn't work. And so that's how she lived her life. She got around in a wheelchair. She transferred herself from her bed to a wheelchair with, like, a pulley system kind of a thing. The reality is her legs do work. Her perception was off. And so what happens is this. When someone's suffering from this kind of body dysmorphia, BIID comes in and says, doctor, this is not my hand. It's not my real hand. Can you amputate it? Doctors around the world are instructed, no, that's actually their hands. Don't amputate a healthy limb. Their perception is wrong, not the reality. But when it comes to sex, we all lose our brains and we all lose our minds. When a man goes in or a woman goes in and says, doctor, these external genitalia are not mine. They're not actually a part of me. I perceive that they shouldn't be here. And apparently we're okay with doctors saying, okay, well, then we'll have sex reassignment surgery or gender reassignment surgery. And yet, that seems to be kind of covering over the real problem, just like amputating a healthy limb be covering over the real problem. In fact, that's the conclusion that a guy named Dr. Paul McHugh into. He was the chief psychiatrist of Johns Hopkins Hospital. So this isn't like a crackpot doctor. This is the ex-chief psychiatrist of Johns Hopkins. He dealt with a lot of these cases of people who identified as transgender. They saw themselves as a member of the opposite sex. with sex reassignment surgery, he said, yeah, some of these patients experienced a satisfaction of that reassignment, but they were still disturbed. They were still hurting. And he came to this conclusion. He said, we had to stop doing sex reassignment surgery because, he says, we found that producing satisfied but a still troubled patient seemed an inadequate reason for surgically amputating normal organs. Because I could change these external factors, but the reality is, at the heart of everything, I'm still a man or I'm still a woman. And when it comes down to it, that's the message of love. This is not a message of judging. This is not a message of criticizing. This is not even a message of trying to blame anyone or make them a monster. No, absolutely not. These are people who are hurting. Anyone, the people in my life who have been hurting from anorexia or any kind of the kind of body dysmorphia or even this kind of sense of identifying with members of the opposite gender, all of that comes down to someone who's hurting. So what are we called to do as Catholics? Well, we don't have to judge because no one's calling us a judge and no one wants us to judge. We don't need to judge. What we're called to do is called to walk with people. That's one of the best things we do as Catholics is we walk with people. We listen to them. We hear what they're really saying. And then we're able to just not have to yell at anyone and not have to criticize anyone. Just be able to say, let me walk with you. I don't have to give you what you want in order to love you. But I am called to walk with you in order to love you. That's why it's easy for me to say this on the video, to say, here, we're called to do this. What really happens is this. When Catholics, when those who belong to Jesus, are willing to get into the messiness of someone's, you know, someone's brokenness, someone's wound, it doesn't matter what it is. Listen to...
Sorry, we're out of time. But I think you could have that level of conversation with a teenager. Like, that wasn't outlandish in language or technicality, and I think pretty good model of how it might look. So just some input. Thanks, guys. Sorry, completely out of time.